Lot to talk about. Let's try to get it, see if we can cover it today in our last and final session. So just to quickly recap the framework that we wanted to work off of. So we started to mention that, to use the Chafetz Chaim's framework, that essentially, well, first we talked about the notion of Toelis and how Lashon Hara in general, we work within these two poles, that on the one hand, we don't want to say anything which could pose a risk of harm to someone else, of unjustified harm. So we try to be careful not to talk negatively about people, and we consider that to be a prohibition. Maybe many prohibitions, many severe prohibitions. On the other hand, we also cannot allow innocent people to suffer. And the Torah tells us, Lo samar al dam riecha. And we have to navigate between those two poles. And it's not easy. There's no real safe side. We have to really think carefully about how to do that. And very often people take the opposite approach, that they're very quick to talk about something as long as it's not important, as long as it's not significant. And of course, if it is important, then you have to be very, very careful to only say the right thing, but that's the only scenario where maybe something should be said. And we started to say that in the context of marriage, the stakes are very high on both sides. If you don't say something when it should be said, you could allow a couple to go down a very, very disastrous path that could affect many, many people. But if you do say something that's unfair, then you could also do tremendous harm to people that could also last a lifetime. So we have to be very, very careful. And we're trying to sketch out some parameters. So we started to talk about if a person is consulted about a shidduch. So let's say you're not asked a specific question, but you're considering what to volunteer. So I think at the very end of our last session, so we started to note, the Chafetz Chaim has, say, three categories of what you should volunteer. And in those three categories, he gives examples. The examples may or may not speak to us. It's not necessarily so much about the examples, but what we can extrapolate from the examples. So the first category was that if you have something which is a clear major issue, something that most people would be very concerned about and that would have a very likely impact on most people's decisions, so then that's something that for sure you should volunteer. And, you know, we talked about timing. That's a big factor last week, last time on Monday we talked about that. But if the issue is one that's definitely going to have an impact, so then presumably that's the kind of thing that you want to bring up earlier rather than later, because it was definitely going to have an impact, so then better that should be addressed earlier. However, there are considerations that are less blatant. So things that are likely to have an impact, but not necessarily as clear. So that we mentioned the timing consideration. But also the Chafetz Chaim's second category said you should not volunteer. So is that something where you may not be so impressed, but it's something which you don't have any reason to think that they necessarily, the people asking you, have any particular issue with. So he gave the example, if somebody's not so sophisticated, they don't necessarily catch on to people's tricks. So that's not something that you should volunteer. And maybe it's something that they don't care about. And if you look at the Chafetz Chaim's language, you see that he's very strong about this. Look at this, says his real Lashon Hara, because when you start bringing up something that's not an objective issue, there's no inherent reason why nobody should marry somebody who is described this way, but you are creating the impression that it's an issue, and therefore putting in the other person's mind the thought that, oh, maybe I should worry about this, even though it's not necessarily something that's relevant to their life, that's extremely harmful. And the Chafetz Chaim has very strong language about how that is a profound violation of Lashon Hara. And we started to say last time that this is relevant to the increasing machla that we find among guys nowadays, the idea that the biggest consideration has been what we've called Ri'iyas HaChaveirim, that the more important than any other factor is, do your friends see it? Doesn't matter all of the recommendations of great rabbis, of people who have known the other party for generations and who can vouch for every important aspect of their character and their background and their values. All of that pales in comparison to, do your friends see it? If your friends see it, okay, then you'll consider it. Otherwise, they don't get a date. They don't get any consideration. That has no basis in anything. And your friends are not Nevi'im. And I have friends who are in the field of psychology and social analysis. And I've asked them if they would do a big service to humanity. If you could do a study, they should do a survey of happily married people, meaning people who don't regret marrying who they married, and see how many of them, their friends didn't see it, nobody would have set them up, they weren't sure they wanted to go on a second date, they don't know what they want. The idea that somebody else can tell you who you're going to get along with, such a mistake. So to put a stock in, put any kind of weight in what your friends see or don't see, it's a total fiction that has been invented the past few years, and has less than 50% accuracy rate. So you're better off flipping a coin. So just flip a coin rather than asking your friends. Now, it's true, if somebody wants to encourage something, saying, okay, I see a lot of commonality between you and this girl, and I think she's worth meeting, and you're considering among a number of people, and okay, this one has particular reasons why there might be something more to connect it to of you. Okay, there's no harm. But what I'm referring to here is, and this is a frequently seen reality, is that people will not consider somebody because their friends don't see it, their friends postulate it, and therefore they will not even meet somebody because of that. That's what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about negative disqualifying of somebody, and that comes out of nowhere, and I think that is squarely in this category that the Chafetz Chaim is addressing here, and we should completely get rid of that whole reality, especially, you know, when the recommendation is coming from qualified people, as I often see the case. I know there's one very, very prominent rabbi in this institution has complained to me many times that he knows families very well and he works with the students here, and he'll suggest a young lady to students who he knows the family, he knows the young lady, he knows everything about her, and has only the greatest things to say about her, and the young man will say, yeah, my friends don't see it, so thanks anyway. This happens every day, and this is cannot say anything good about that kind of an attitude. This is not the way to go about it, and has to be reversed, that whole trend. I would also add, and I've heard some horrifying things about this recently, which I'm not even willing to repeat, but in terms of discussing the attractiveness of a potential date, so here there are a whole host of issues. Certainly tznius among them, but one should be very, very careful in terms of commenting about that category. So first of all, you said tznius is very much a consideration, and not sure how much people are always significantly concerned about that. But also in terms of, for anyone to comment negatively in that area, so once again, I would say that is the definition of Lashon Hara, probably the most blatant example I could come up with of objective Lashon Hara, because this is an area which is purely subjective, and that everyone has their own particular ability to appreciate or not to appreciate. There are very few objective assessments in this area. So for someone to plant in another's mind that, oh, this person is not attractive, this person cannot be found attractive by anyone else, does enormous harm. So it's not factual, almost by definition. And It creates the mindset. A person says, okay, well, then that's not somebody I'm going to be interested in. Even though if they hadn't heard that, if they hadn't had that planted in their mind, then who knows, they could have had a very different impression. Like a mice of cholyom. And it does enormous harm and can do a lifetime of damage. So I think that's the literal definition of what Lashon Hara is in the most objective sense. It's something that is not an objective fact. It's something which does enormous damage, and therefore such as not L'Tawalos. Hi.
So considering, like the Rav said, that attractiveness is something that's subjective and relative to the individual, when the Rav suggests that there's almost no basis and nothing anyone can really say regarding attractiveness that would be beneficial for the process.
Pretty much, I'm saying that there is an idea of, say, you know, Kalanav, Chasuda, you know, later. Somebody wants to say something positive, so to encourage something, so then it's a different issue. There's still a point of being Tzanua.
Right.
You know, the Tzanias consideration still applies there, but we do find, you know, a basis for that, and sometimes people do need encouragement. And unfortunately, because the environment has created an environment where people expect, unfortunately, to have this commented upon, so there can be a reality where if there's nothing said at all, people infer a negative. A soft positive, there might be room, and again, sanua, a positive, there might be room to say something. And again, we do have a tradition of Kaladav Chesuda, which I'll say a little bit more about in a moment. But certainly to say something negative, and again, the Stias consideration, you have to be very careful. I've heard that there's a trend of people commenting on social media, WhatsApp. I'm not makabel that Bnei Yeshiva would be involved in such a thing. I'm assuming it's not true. But I would very strongly exhort everyone to remember the notion of tznias, the notion of respecting the dignity of every Bas Yisrael, and of understanding that there is inherent beauty in every Bas Yisrael that don't have to talk about in a prost way. But, you know, certainly, so the Tznias consideration applies across the board, but also to say anything negative does enormous damage, and that's a straight out Lashon Hara, there's no question. It applies on both sides, but just to give an example, which, you know, one might think may have a logical bias about, but it's just a helpful illustration. So let's say, for example, a girl feels that she has to go out with a tall guy. So one could argue she doesn't really have to, but that's okay. Everyone's entitled to have whatever bias they may feel they have. It's hard to tell somebody what kind of bias they need to have. It's their personal thing. But what for sure shouldn't happen is for someone else to implant that bias in their mind. So for example, if a shadchan says to a girl who didn't have this machshava beforehand, that, oh, here's a good guy, but oh, he's not tall enough for you. So now she thinks, oh, maybe I'm mechliv to go out with a tall guy, and maybe there's something hashkafically wrong with me going out with a guy who's shorter. So that's a terrible avla. You know, why should she think that, oh, I'll be ruach haTorah? You know, she hears that from a Rebbe. You know, she hears that, oh, there's something wrong with my going out with somebody who's shorter than me. You know, other avla, it does enormous damage. And there's no halachic value in that. There's no hashkafic value. So you have to be very, very careful in the way we talk and in the thoughts that you implant in somebody else's minds. Again, if it's a positive thought that's going to encourage somebody to give somebody a chance, so then that's something that has some value to it. And again, tznias has to be very much consideration. If it's something negative and something subjective, you have to be very, very careful. Now, also related to that, so, you know, we mentioned already the third category, the Chafetz Chaim, where he talked about you shouldn't volunteer. He says you shouldn't volunteer if the guy is not necessarily such a Talmud Chacham. And the reason you shouldn't volunteer it, he said, is because the girl's father can give him a farher. So that may or may not resonate with us in our contemporary culture. Clearly not every girl has a father who has the ability, or nowadays even the access, right? Our whole culture is different. So he's imagining a scenario where every girl before she went on a date. So the boy came to her house and met her father, and the father was the Talmud Chacham who was able to talk to him and learning. So clearly there's a lot about the scenario that may not necessarily speak to the contemporary situation. But our main point is really to extrapolate from that. To extrapolate as to his point being that if there's something that there's an easier path to find out and they're not taking that path, so then it's not your job to volunteer that information. Then they've already displayed what their interest is about this factor, and it's not your job to volunteer it. So that may have relevance, and you can assess where it's relevant to. I mentioned last time something that's easily available on Google, if that's a tool people are using, so then it may not be your responsibility to volunteer it. They're coming to you for other things. You know, parenthetically, the specific example that he gave about learning, you know, even when they are asking, if they're asking you about learning, so then that means they are expressing their interest in hearing from you about that. But it's also important to try to ascertain what exactly they want to know. You know, as students, you may not necessarily be getting this question. If you go into chinuch, if you go into the rabbanis, you go into education, so then you may get this question about your students and how are they in learning. And it's important to try to clarify why are they asking, because that question can mean lots of different things. Do they want to know, is the student serious about Torah? Do they want to know, is he somebody who's going to have an observant household? Is he somebody who's passionate about Avodas Hashem? Is he somebody who's bright? Is he somebody who's going to be respected by his peers? There's 10 different things that question could mean. Is it somebody who's going to treat his wife to derech eretz? Is it somebody who has the midos of a Talmud Chacham? There's many different aspects that can emerge from that question. So if you're going to answer that question accurately, it's important to try to ascertain what exactly it is that they care about when they ask that question. So that's it's a little bit of an aside, because I don't know how much that's necessarily what you're dealing with. But in any event, to shift over for a second to away from what you're volunteering to what about the questions that you're asked specifically. So the Chafetz Chaim until now we were saying is things that you should be volunteering if you're not asked specifically. But the Chafetz Chaim assumes that if you're asked questions directly, so the person asking has the right to ask whatever they want to ask, and they can ask as many people as they need to ask, and then you have to answer the questions honestly. So, okay, but I think there's still some qualifying points we need to discuss about that. So, first of all, just as far as lumdus is concerned, it's an interesting question why that's true. Because if the premise of this whole discussion is lo samud al dam reyecha, if we're saying that the premise is you're saying things because you're preventing potential harm, so why does it matter if you're asked? It shouldn't make a difference, right? If you're obligated to prevent harm, then you should have to volunteer whether you're asked or not. Even if they're not even calling you in the first place, you should have to call up anybody who might be dating this person and volunteer the information, if it's that kind of harm. And if it's not relevant to protecting potential harm, then it shouldn't matter if they ask you or don't ask you. Why is asking a relevant factor? So the Sfarim try to figure out why this is. And there are a couple of suggestions. Some suggest that there's subjective harm and there's objective harm. That when it's something that you can perceive on your own is an objective problem, so then that's definite losamad al dam reyacha, and that imposes a chiyuv on you. When it's something that you don't know is necessarily relevant, so then, okay, once they tell you that this is something they care about, so then it imposes a chiyuv. It also goes to define the issue a little bit. That when we say losamad al dam reyacha, you know, what are we trying to protect? So on the one hand, we're certainly trying to save someone, let's say, from God forbid, from an abusive marriage. We're trying to save somebody from a violent person, for sure. So if you know that somebody is dangerous or the like, so for sure you're trying to prevent that from happening. But you're also trying to save someone simply from incompatibility, from an unworkable marriage, an unhappy marriage. So that you may not know until you hear the questions, until somebody tells you what they're looking for. So then you're able to understand what may create an incompatible marriage. And then you are able to more correctly assess that. So there are some details which you only are able to address once you're asked. But within that, so yes, understanding what the Chofetz Chaim said, they can ask whatever they want and you have to answer honestly, I think there still are some caveats to address. So first of all, what does it mean to answer honestly? So I went on a whole rant a few minutes ago about how you shouldn't say, do you see it or not? You shouldn't volunteer about whether you see it, and this whole idea of the Ri'as Chaverim should be nullified and wiped out. So what if the person calls you up and asks you, do you see it? So, you're obligated to answer honestly. So I will tell you, the honest answer is, I don't know, because you are not a Navi. Now again, if you want to encourage something positively, so no harm done. So if you want to say, yes, there's a lot here that might be worthwhile, they're worth meeting, then that might be a positive thing to do. But to say, I don't see it, there's no way that can be the truth, because again, unless you are gifted with Nevuah, so then I have a lot of other questions to ask you, so please let me know. But unless you're gifted with Nevuah, you don't know the answer to that question. Again, if we're talking about wildly incompatible values, that might be a different story, but talking about just personalities, just because one is loud and one is quiet and one is funny and one is serious, people have found each other in much wilder situations. So the honest answer to that question is, I don't know. And that is the truth. So answering honestly very often means, I don't know, and even if they're pushing you, and they said, no, but really, I think that's the appropriate response. And also, to go to our previous point, they say, is she attractive? And you don't think that's a negative answer. They don't think that's something you should volunteer. No, okay. Kalanov, Chasuda, across the board, if you want to say anything, but to say something negative can do a lot of harm, even if they're pushing you for an answer. Also, I would also put a caveat on the idea they can ask you anything. If there's something, Ravadji Yosef has in one of the Svarim, that if it's something that you don't think is actually relevant, that you can be Mishanet Neha Shalom, you can say something that's not true because of Shalom. I would be afraid of that, even if it's true Al Pi Din. Like if it's something that you think would cause machlokis, if you say it, or, you know, then because the Gemara says that there are things that you're allowed to deviate from the truth, but they have shalom. So if it's not really harmful, if you assess that it's not really harmful, and it's not, then you can say something not true. That may be true Al Pi Din as far as Midvar Sheker Tirchak is concerned. I wouldn't recommend that as a policy because if it ever comes out, you know, you're going to create tremendous harm both within their relationship and within your relationship with the questioner. Trust is going to be a big problem. But maybe you're not obligated to answer every question. So if there's something that you know in confidence, so then, and especially this is going to be more relevant if you become a Rebbe or a Rabbi or the like, so it's, and they're asking you questions that are not necessarily their business. You know, so nowadays, I think the pendulum has swung because there's so much that doesn't get revealed that should have been revealed. So sometimes the questionnaires become very, very specific. And people who haven't met yet at all, so their questions are coming, get very intrusive. I'm not even going to say some of the examples of some of the questions that have been asked.
Like, what do you think is inappropriate to ask?
Because then there are questions about, you know, for example, health issues are important. And sometimes, as I discussed a little bit on Monday, many issues need to be revealed before a commitment. Not all of them need to be revealed before a date. Now, that's a complicated question because you may be in a position of responsibility to make sure that they do get revealed, depending on what they are. There's a whole spectrum of health issues. And it may be your responsibility, depending on who you are, to make sure that they are revealed before a commitment is made, but not necessarily before a date. So, for example, if a parent calls me and asks, has the person ever seen a therapist? Right, so it's important to see a therapist when they can provide help. This is something which one should do. It can provide a lot of benefit and insight and valuable, and it's not something that should not be stigmatized and seen as any kind of a negative. And the person should be credited for doing what's necessary to make sure that they're able to approach the world in a healthy manner. But for some reason, somebody might stigmatize that, unfortunately, and say, okay, well then I'm not interested in that. And that would be a very unfortunate approach. So if somebody's going to call me up and ask that, and I only know that because the student asked me for a recommendation, so I have an obligation of confidentiality to the student, and I can't reveal that to anybody who calls me. They may not even be in a relationship. So then, I think you have an obligation to say you don't know. Not to lie again, because, you know, lie that I say that no, you know, because to say that they haven't, because, you know, they'll have other ways of finding out, but, you know, to provide that information that you only know in confidence. And, you know, again, if there's something that's a serious issue, so then you have to make sure that it gets revealed before there's a commitment, and you may need to stay involved to make sure that it gets revealed before there's a commitment. That's, again, a very serious responsibility. But when the questioner, let's say, for example, I have no reason to think that there's any actual issue that will impact the marriage, but the question is being formulated as an absolute, anyone who's ever seen a therapist, I don't want anything to deal with, which is a highly unfortunate attitude, and probably the opposite of a wise approach.
Yeah.
But I'd say more than probably, definitely the opposite of a wise approach, but someone's taking that approach. And I discussed this, I had the opportunity to discuss this recently with the Vashra Weishlita, and he felt that as well, that would be the proper response to say, I don't know. We can't create an environment where a student's going to ask me for a recommendation. I'm going to tell that to anybody who calls. The student's not even necessarily even in a relationship with this person. You know, if the student is in a relationship with this person, so then hopefully they'll be able to be open with each other about everything. But before a first date, it's not appropriate, and we should have a culture where that's not being asked before a first date. And again, I hope I'm being clear about the balance, that anything that seriously could impact on the marriage has to be revealed before there is a commitment, and the parties themselves should understand the necessity to do that, and it's not always possible to rely on that, so a responsible third party may have to maintain a connection to the situation to make sure that happens. So if somebody has called them and it was at a stage where they couldn't yet reveal it and they know it's progressing, they may have to maintain an involvement later on and say, okay, has everything been disclosed that needs to be disclosed? But I'm talking here about a couple of factors that are separated from that when it's being asked early on, and it's not something that you have a reason to think would affect. So again, I'm not going as far as Bravaj's position of saying you should say something that's the opposite of the truth, but to not be the one to be revealing it. I think there's more room to say that, and I would very, very much also sympathize with the position that Rav Asher expressed further in that conversation, that, you know, we have to have a careful balance here. So we have to be more ready to be on top of the bigger issues that have caused terrible problems in marriages. So we have to not conceal those problems. But the issues that are beneath that threshold, so where we're writing off people before we ever meet them in the first place, that's what I'm addressing here. And the line that Rav Asher said, I was talking to him, is, our children deserve a chance. Meaning that people should be, to the extent possible, you want to experience people as individuals with a total package before you start disqualifying them based on these details. Again, I'm not talking about huge character flaws. I'm not talking about dangerous people. I'm not talking about major factors that make them incompatible with healthy marriages. I'm talking about various challenges that many people have to deal with that are not their fault and not uncommon. So even though they're the kind of things that do need to be disclosed along the path of a relationship, but the ideal is that, and I'm being very vague about what falls into one category and what doesn't, and you know this may be more appropriate in a one-on-one conversation, but I'm sympathetic to that mentality, and I think that from a v'ahavta l'recha kamocha component is true also, that human beings ideally should be appreciated as complex human beings with positives and negatives, and then we can assess where exactly all these factors fit in. Make sense? Okay, so that's also there's still a lot more to say, so a few more minutes. So that's, yeah.
You should give, like, I guess, a practical example of, like, something that really should be said, or, like, something that, like, doesn't have to be said. You get a really good example of something that shouldn't have, like, doesn't have to be said, like, seeing a therapist. Give an example of something that, like, really should be said. That's, like, common.
That should be said. If a person is violent, if a person has a terrible temper issue, if a person has.
What if one of the parties is like a smoker or something, let's say, or like drinks a lot, or
occasionally smokes weed?
A drug issue, you know, definitely.
Like, I know, yeah, that's a very common thing.
So that
should be not, like, if a guy, if you've seen a guy like in the past has smoked weed.
Yeah, you know, the past, you know, I got these questions. It get a little bit subjective as far as the degree. Yeah. At some point.
Right now, they're still doing that and stuff. Like, are you supposed to volunteer that, or only if they ask?
I don't know if that's the thing. An addiction of a significant nature, I think, is something that can affect a relationship and that people wouldn't necessarily think to ask of. Yeah. But you can get a little bit more subjective, so maybe that's more for a one-on-one conversation. But I think you get to general.
Yeah.
You know, something that can really affect their ability to have a stable household, and they wouldn't necessarily think to ask of, but that the average household would be impacted by.
Yeah.
I think that's something that should give strength. If it's really not clear, then that's what giving a guidance would be for on a case-by-case basis. But since we only have about 5 or 10 more minutes or less, I just want to throw a few more things onto the table. So, in addition to some of these considerations, so I would say a few more points. So also, separate from the kinds of questions and the kinds of answers, so there's also some considerations about who to ask. So we mentioned the Chafetz Chaim's criteria last time and how some of them are controversial. So one of the points that was actually the most controversial among his list was that, we're talking about Tawalis in general, so if you're trying to prevent harm, so you're obligated to say something, but he had a whole list of what you have to qualify. And on his list was that you shouldn't have any negative history with this person. You shouldn't have any animus towards this person. And it was very controversial because there were those who said, well, if you're trying to save somebody from being victimized, so the fact that you have a bias against this person, so how can that impact on things? If the person is going to be victimized, you've got to save them one way or another. So it was a very controversial point. There's a whole sefer in the library that you can find if I ever give it back that defends the Chofetz Chaim on this one issue, because it was a very controversial point. But it's significant because the Chofetz Chaim's point is presumably that this could very much color the discussion. So, especially in our very close-knit, small circles here, that one has to be careful. So if you're asking somebody, let's say if you're asking somebody who has a history with a girl, you're asking about a girl, so you might be asking somebody either who had gone out with her and broke up and is upset about it and has unfair attitudes for that reason, or maybe you're asking somebody who wants to go out with her and therefore doesn't want you to be successful. And there could be all kinds of biases. They don't have to rise to the level of a sone, we can just talk about in this forum, but there could be all kinds of biases that could affect the discussion. And that's something to consider. and something to be very aware of, because that's hugely relevant, especially in our close-knit circles. And that's a consideration. A second consideration, maybe in the opposite direction, is that something that the psychologists have identified called the availability bias. The availability bias is that people overcredit the information that they have the most access to. So the person I can ask, I assume he's the expert just because he's the only person I can ask. It doesn't really mean that he's necessarily the expert. So if I heard of a name and I only know one person who knows this person, I think that they're going to give me the best information, but it's not necessarily true. Remember when I was in college here, so I had relatives in more Haredi circles, so if they were considering somebody from YU, so they'd always call me, but I didn't necessarily know this person, and I was just the only person who they knew from YU, so they assumed that I knew this person, but I couldn't really give them a very good picture. So that's the availability bias, that the assumption that just, okay, the one person you know who knows this person has a good assessment of that individual. So you have to also be aware of that, that just because this is the one connection you have to the person who's being suggested, doesn't necessarily mean that their information is credible. But they also may feel like that they should know more. So once you're asking them, so then they may feel bad that they don't really know much, especially if maybe they are in a position where they should know, and just be aware of that, that the information may not be so solid. And that's also something to consider. It's also a discussion that when a relationship doesn't work out, so then it's a very tricky thing, because talking about that becomes a, and somebody asked about that last time, talking about that becomes a very sensitive issue as far as Lashon Hara is concerned. There's clearly a temptation to do so. The person who's trying to get over it is going to feel like they want to talk about it. And also there's a feeling maybe there's a toelus to talk about it, because let's say they want to tell the Shadchan how to get a better picture of how to come up with a new idea. Or maybe the Shadchan also is still going to be dealing with the person who they broke up with, and they want to get a better picture of that person. So one could feel that there's a lot of toelus involved in talking about it. May or may not be the case, but there's also a lot of potential damage involved in talking about it. So one should be extremely careful about that, because there's a very strong possibility that the harm could outweigh the good. There's a lot of emotional bias that's going to enter into the picture. So while there is the possibility that there could be some toelus in being able to either provide a sharper picture of what you're looking for, or to give a stronger picture of the other person so that it can be helpful to them, or certainly if you discover the other person is dangerous in some way, then there's theoretically some toelus, but it's also very likely that all these other factors could overwhelm the toelus, and that the damage could overwhelm the toelus. So one should be extremely careful about that. And again, the temptation is very strong. So
you shouldn't speak to that individual
altogether? I'm also suggesting right now, if you are that individual, say if you're a person who just ended a relationship and you want to talk about it, so I'm saying that you should be very, very careful about talking about it, because the chances that you're going to do some significant damage are high. So recognizing that there is some toelus, first of all, in needing to deal with your own feelings and needing to help somebody get a better picture of what you're looking for, there are some toeluses that we can identify, but the risk of doing strong damage to the other party unfairly is very high and likely, and the temptation to do so is very present. And again, we're in a close-knit environment here, in a relatively small community, so the damage is very matzli, is very shriach, and one should be very, very careful. And it takes a lot of gvura to be careful, because again, it's an emotionally charged time very often. And there could even be, there's a broken engagement, so the emotion will be even higher, and the questions will be even more public. And it takes a lot of gvura and restraint to be careful about that, but nonetheless, you know, it's impossible to address the details and the specifics of any situation that's so varied. But all I can say about that is to recognize the pitfalls and to be extremely careful and to try to probably get guidance in terms of what really is fair to share and with whom and under what circumstances, because the danger is great. So I think we're over time. So are there any specific questions that we didn't cover? Yeah?
The last two things that, the first two things that we just threw on the table in the latter part of this year, seem to point out the pitfalls of consulting with fellow Bachrim who are also in the parasha. The Rav generally advised to stay away from, you know, confirming and validating and inquiring with like that, you know, the available bias that you mentioned with fellow Bachrim who are.
Well, I should clarify, as I repeat the question, I first of all should mention that a lot of wonderful shidduchim have been made because friends, either friends who are recently married or friends who are still dating, have set each other up. So I want to emphasize that there's a lot of very positive good that comes from these conversations. Yeah. So do not want to discourage all conversation among Bachrim. A lot of wonderful marriage has happened, but what I'm talking about, though, there's also a lot of negatives, so we have to be very careful about that. So judging people's compatibility based on nevuah, what are the pitfalls? The pitfalls are postulating relationships based on nevuah. That's the word for the I don't see it. That's what you want to avoid. And you want to avoid non-sanua conversations. You want to avoid negative assessments of people's attractiveness, and that does tremendous damage. And also the emotional baggage one might have because they went out with somebody and they still want to, or they're negatively disposed against them, or all of that, how that could bias things. Those are all some of the pitfalls. And then the availability bias going the other direction, that maybe they may not know it very much about the person and just you're going to them because they're the only connection you have. You know, it's just kind of the opposite, you know, we just mentioned they may have too much of an emotional connection, or maybe they just have too little of a connection and just, you know, they're the only other person from Uganda and NYU, so, you know, whatever it is, just to pick a random country. So those are among the pitfalls. But all of those pitfalls being said, Chaverim looking out for each other has been a source of many happy, wonderful shidduchim, and that should continue, God willing, and that should be encouraged. That's a tremendous chesed. And that's also one of the major upsides of all the dates that don't work out, is very often they lead to other dates that do work out between friends, and that's a wonderful thing. But those pitfalls should be avoided. So no negative nevuahs, no violations of tznius, no postulating people unjustifiably, no emotional biases getting in the way. Those are some of the considerations to look out for. All right, hopefully it should all be l'toelas, it should all bring about simcha and not the opposite, and the mandate of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha and all of its appropriate manifestations should hopefully bring us to all the right places.
Amen.
All right, thank you so much. Well done.